Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the stations you're listening to. They're my views. They're views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us on the line this evening one of our supporters. His name is Kyle Grunwald, and we're going to be talking about what's happening financially to America, happening financially to the world. But before I do, I just want to talk about what's really happening in the world. You're not really being allowed to know. The controlled media is not going to tell you that there is an organized, orchestrated effort to bankrupt our country, to redistribute the wealth of the American people, and that's point 10 in the Earth Charter, redistribute the wealth between nations. Now, China is, of course, amassing well over $100 billion of American dollars every year. And what do you do when you have all that money? Well, if you're smart, you will spend it. You will hang on to it and see it go down in value. So China is moving up into Canada. They're bidding there on the oil shale. They're bidding on much of the mineral wealth of Canada, and they're purchasing the mineral wealth of Canada. They're moving into Central and at least into South America, and of course buying things in Venezuela, and of course going to be doing exploration for oil in Venezuela. They certainly, as you know, they control the centers on the both ends of the Panama Canal, the large bases there for shipping. They have their large shipping bases in the Bahamas. They're progressively surrounding the United States. And not only militarily, but also economically. And they're coming into the United States and buying up many of our industries. In fact, IBM is thinking of selling their PC business to them for $1.5 billion. Of course, there has been some question on the part of some of our politicians, and that deal has not gone through yet. China is talking about buying up Unocal, Union Oil Company of California. They're buying up oil concessions all over the world in the Sudan. They're making contracts with Iran, because they need oil as their economy expands and more people are in cars. They're going to need more and more oil there. Their oil requirements are doubling almost on a yearly basis, and so they're making arrangements to pipe oil from Iran and from Central Asia and even from Russia China to fuel their industry, because 10 years from now, China and India will be the great industrial centers, and America will become a second-class nation, not by accident, but by intent. Our leaders have a different agenda. They do not have a loyalty to America. Their loyalty to this idea of the world government, the new world order, the new world religion. And with that as a background, let's get to Kyle Grunwald and talk what's happening economically to our country today, as we find that today the price of oil went up over $50 again. The price of gold and silver has been manipulated for some time, and they're really beginning to come back. Kyle, how are you doing tonight?
Very good, Stan. Good to be back on your show.
Well, tell us what you see. I know you keep your eye to what's going on, just as I do, because I think it's important to understand what's happening economically, to understand what's going on politically and militarily. So what do you see happening economically?
Well, it's not good. As we talked about a couple months ago, the Fed is planning to drop the dollar another 20%. It was kind of not taken back today, but I was talking to one of my clients, and he was saying that he heard on the radio that the U.S. dollar is going to be dropped another 20% in value.
Well, right there. All right, this is Dr. Stan. Kyle, just go ahead and pick up what you were saying.
He was saying that he heard on the radio today that she was kind of shocked to hear it, but and so was I, that the actual media, the media would be saying these things. But he said they made the announcement that the American public should get ready for the dollar dropping another 20%.
Well, what that really means, of course, is that everybody is going to have 20% of everything they've spent their whole life working for simply stolen from them by the international financiers. And believe me, they're not invested in American dollars. They're invested in foreign currencies and intangible items, because those people are invested in paper assets at this time, where they simply become certificates of guaranteed confiscation.
Yes, that's very true. And the American public is just like the frog in the water sitting on the stove while it, you know, gets hotter, but they're not moving. And they end up boiling to death, and that's really what's happening. People who are paying attention are moving money out of paper into commodities, and specifically into gold and silver. You know, gold and silver kind of bottomed out a few weeks back. Gold got down to 4.13. Silver is down to around 6.640, and now gold today finished at 4.34.50, and then silver was at 7.52, and so. They're coming back very, very fast. Today, South Korea, I'm sure you are well aware, made the announcement that they're going to be divesting themselves of the dollar. They hold over $200 billion of our dollars, and they're going to be divesting themselves of that. And they have bought large amounts of Canadian and Australian currency to take the place of the dollar. And that hit the dollar very hard today. It dropped 2%. And again, this is just the beginning. This is, as you said, orchestrated. It's planned. And those who are in tune are doing something about it as far as their own personal lives.
Well, I really think that's really very interesting. I hadn't heard that South Korea was going to would actually make an announcement that they were going to divest themselves of dollars. Did they actually make that as an announcement?
Yeah, they made that announcement.
Well, of course, you know, once countries begin saying they're going to get out of the dollar, why, this can have a profound psychological impact, and especially, you know, as we see our debts soaring, no effort at all being made at all to cut back on spending. In fact, instead of giving $350 million that we don't have in tsunami relief, as the federal government now, they've upped it to almost $1 billion. And, of course, where is the outcry from the American people? If we want to give, and I think the American people did give money, and we gave money for relief, but that is not the function of our federal government to give away our money at their behest. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Cal was talking about how an announcement had come out today, which I hadn't heard, but he said that South Korea had announced that they were going to divest themselves of the American dollar and move into other currencies, perhaps the Canadian currencies, other currencies that have some stability behind them. Well, if other countries begin making such announcements, why, this really could start really a run throughout the world on the American dollar. And if countries start scrambling to get out of American dollars, why, it can have, can lock it down a lot more than the 20% Kyle is talking about. And, of course, really what the average American doesn't understand is that other countries are looking at what we're doing. First of all, they're furious with America, because they fear that America may be leading the world into World War III. The Europeans, one of our friends just got back from there, the Europeans are all furious with the United States for going into Iraq and lying about why we went in. Oh, they have weapons of mass destruction. We've got to stop them and for lying about why we went into Afghanistan. Oh, we've got to get Osama bin Laden. But they know what the American people don't know is we never went in to get Osama bin Laden. We didn't try to get Osama bin Laden. We know exactly where Osama bin Laden is. We have no intention of capturing him. He's one of the finest enemies that we can have, because he becomes the boogeyman that, of course, keeps us rallied behind the government, which is protecting us from the wicked Osama bin Laden by, of course, going into Iraq and fighting the terrorists on the streets of Baghdad rather than the streets of New York. The only trouble is, if there's really a threat here in the United States, why haven't we had any attacks in over 3 long years? With all the opportunities they have and all of the open borders that we have, and why have there been no attacks here? If this is really the threat, or is this all contrived to justify us giving up our freedom and justify America continuing the war in the Middle East? Do other countries see through what's going on? The average American can't, because they've listened to Rush Limbaugh too long. But the difficulty is that we are antagonizing the entire world. There are movements throughout the rest of the world saying, do not buy American. And certainly boycott American products. And, of course, you get about 6 billion people feeling this way. We're going to be in real trouble selling our products. Now, we still have planes better than anybody else can make them right now, except maybe Europe with their Airbus. But we are subsidizing. The only reason people buy our planes is because we subsidize Boeing and, of course, so it can be competitive with the Airbus, with the European planes. But we've got a real problem because other countries are furious with us. They realize our dollar is falling, and the people who kept their money in American dollars have lost about 50% of the value in comparison with the euro over the last 3 or 4 years. How long are the major central banks of the world going to stay in the dollar? What are your thoughts, Cal?
Well, again, another announcement today. I shouldn't say announcement, but what's going on is that central banks around the world are divesting themselves or dumping dollars. And about a week ago, Russia announced that they're going to be ending the ruble de facto pegged to the dollar, and they're going to be aligning it with the euro. And again, this is just like, you know, one duck after another just falling over. The dollar is losing value very, very fast, losing faith. And as you said, especially Germany and France are infuriated with our conquest of Iraq, you know, just to get the oil. Everybody, the whole world knows why we're over there. And, you know, we can't fool anybody anymore. So it's a concerted effort on the part of the, you know, the world powers to build up their armaments to come against us. And World War III is really, really around the corner, just around the corner.
I think that what people have to understand is the price of oil has not really gone up at all. It's all a mirage. It's all an illusion. It is simply that the dollar has fallen so far that the price of oil is exactly the same in relationship to the euro, in relationship to gold, but it is becoming more expensive as far as Americans are concerned. And as long as the value of our currency continues falling, then the things we have to import from other countries will increase in value, and the American people will be progressively impoverished, and the average individual, because they do not understand these concepts of money, and especially a fiat money system that has no backing other than our confidence in the integrity of our leaders, the stability of that currency, of course, cannot be dependent upon at all. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there across America listening, if you agree, if you disagree, we'd love to hear from you. Cal certainly is in the coin business, and he has a great deal of interest in this. He's watching it on a daily basis, which I don't have time to do. I've got to watch everything going on. So and he can certainly probably answer your questions better than I can. But don't you think, Cal, that this oil now, over $50 a barrel as of today, is going to begin to have an impact on the economy here in the United States?
Well, very definitely. People are just going to be just staying home rather than, you know, buying the gasoline at inflated prices. Although it's kind of ironic, about a year ago, you know, gasoline was higher than it is today, and oil was around $35 a barrel. So that kind of tells you something about the manipulation of the oil companies and, you know, gasoline price. It's all what they want it to be. That's all. And they can, you know, milk the public for whatever they want, and we can do nothing about it.
Well, of course, the government certainly isn't going to intervene when they do manipulate the markets, because the government has been manipulating the stock market to keep it up. Why? Because we need the impression, the psychological impression, that everything's fine. The stock market stays up around 10,500. And if it starts to fall, then, of course, the government intervenes through something called the Plunge Protection Team. And this is perfectly legal. Why, because it's all done under executive order. They want to maintain the level of the, you know, of the overall stock market, because this has a psychological impression on the minds of the American people. As the stock market's good, people are happy, they think the economy's good. If the stock market's falling, people are unhappy, they're concerned. And it all has to do with making the people happy, as step by step we impoverish them and redistribute the wealth of the United States throughout the world. Well, Cal, you know, as you see this going on, certainly you must be talking to people all across America. Do you think there's any sort of growing awareness what's really happening? Or is it simply the people who would be calling you who realize, of course, that when you have a fiat money system with nothing behind it, and you have to depend upon the Federal Reserve System to keep a stable currency, and they're not keeping a stable currency. In fact, they're intentionally lowering the value of the dollar. Of course, they said, well, we've got to do that to get our goods more competitive on the world market. And by lowering our dollar low enough, then people will buy our goods, we can export them. But, of course, what does that do to the average American? As you lower the value of the dollar, certainly our goods would be more competitive overseas, but it means that foreign goods, which we're so much dependent upon now, would be increasingly expensive here.
Yeah, It's far too complicated for the average citizen to figure out. They're just content as long as they have their job and their TV and their, you know, six pack of beer and their popcorn. Sounds rather critical, but most people, as you know, in this country, they don't think at all, and they're going to be caught before they know it, and it's going to be too late. I was talking to a gentleman today that about a month ago, he was very, very concerned about the dollar and. The economy's got almost $1 million out there in the stock market, and he was ready to do a lot of business as far as gold and silver. But now the stock market, just like you said, they've been holding it up artificially. And he said, "Well, it feels pretty good, and we're making some money." And of course, he said, "It's not in my hand," but he says, "I think we'll just wait for a while." And this is again exactly what you're saying: is that psychologically they keep people. All hyped up, and as long as those numbers in the dollar are up there, then everything is just fine. But what's going on right now is the dollar is plummeting again. The euro was at 132.30, now, which is about 4 points higher than it was about a few days ago. But that doesn't seem to bother people, and they can hear these announcements that, the dollar is going to drop another 20%, and, that South Korea and, Russia and foreign governments or in central banks are divesting themselves of the dollar, but somehow it just doesn't register. And that's the frog in the water, again.
Well, we plead with people to get hold of a copy of the Earth Charter, because this is the master plan of the people from the dark side. And you can get the Earth Charter on the Internet. If you can't find it there, we'll be glad to send you a copy free of charge. But it is the Mein Kampf for the people who really rule the world. It was written by the former head of the Soviet Union and the man who is the chief advisor to Kofi Annan. Now, the former head of the Soviet Union is Mikhail Gorbachev, one of the most powerful men in the world. And when he puts on his meetings, why the presidents and the kings and the rulers of the world all come to pay homage to Mikhail Gorbachev. So there is a force behind Mikhail, and it is the dark and sinister occult force. We actually have an article that was from a book that was written by James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, talking about when he was over in Russia and talking to some of the Russian officials, who said, things were pretty good until Mikhail Gorbachev went to England and was inducted into a secret Masonic lodge by Margaret Thatcher. And after that, of course, why he came back here and everything began to fall apart. If you go to Mikhail Gorbachev's meetings, you will find there is always a strong occult overtone to everything. Of course, Marie Strong, who is a multi-billionaire, consultant to Kofi Annan, we have an article out of West Magazine, talks about his wife is a witch and certainly has one of the largest occult centers anywhere in the world in Colorado. And then, of course, Stephen Rockefeller, the heir apparent to the Rockefeller trillions of dollars. And if you read, if you can get his book, you will find it in a metaphysical bookstore, in a cult bookstore. It's called Science and Nature. I suggest you get it, read it, and understand what we're really up against. Because behind all the machinations and plans of men are these dark spiritual forces. And point 10 of the Earth Charter says we're going to redistribute the wealth between nations. How are they doing it? They're doing it right today in America, and the average American has no idea what's happening. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Cal Grunwald, and we're certainly talking about what's happening economically. And Cal, you were just suggesting that there are an awful lot of people out there who really don't think that they need to make a move. You were talking about this man who really was in the stock market. Well, if he'd, of course, gone into gold and silver 3 or 4 weeks ago, he would have probably increased his holdings about at least 10% over the last month, wouldn't he?
Yes. In fact, people that I dealt with 2, 3, 4 years ago when gold was way low, they've made probably 30-40% on the money they put into gold and silver, and so they're extremely happy. It's just that the whole thing is that people aren't educated on the value of gold and silver. They think it's ancient, it's old fashioned. It's of course it's not in the media. The other day, even in the Wall Street Journal, you know, when gold made a rally, it wasn't even listed there on the front page as it usually is. And that's all done by design, you know, out of sight, out of mind. So it's all a psychological game, and people don't even know they're in the game. They don't know the rules, and they, you know, they just get manipulated, and they don't know what's happening to them.
Well, what they really don't understand is that Wall Street Journal is the so-called conservative arm of the establishment. They have their liberal arm, that's the New York Times, that's the Washington Post, they have the conservative arm, that's the Reader's Digest and National Geographic and National Review and the Wall Street Journal. But they're all controlled by people who are affiliated with the Council on Foreign Relations and the power structure. In fact, we have an article written back, it was October 1993, I think it is, by Richard Harwood, who was, of course, a writer for the Washington Post, who talked about the journalistic elite who really control our country. I think the title of the article is Ruling Class Journalism. We have it. We make it available for our listeners. And Richard Harwood was talking about how you have your Wall Street Journal on one side, you have your New York Times on the other side. They cover both sides, and of course the American people really don't understand that they are not getting the truth from either side, but they are getting the perception that there's a conflict between the liberals and the conservatives. And as long as they believe that perception, why, of course, they will fail to understand that we are all being manipulated. We are all being manipulated by those people who control things from behind the scenes. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Cal Grunwald. We're talking about what is happening economically. And, of course, one of the most difficult things for people to understand is America is the greatest debtor nation, not only in the world, but the greatest debtor nation the world has ever known. We are today having to get over about $2.4 billion a year lent to us from other countries just to maintain the stability of our economy. In other words, our government itself is spending $2.4 billion a day more on average than it's taking in. And if the other countries in the world stop buying our bonds, then what happens?
Well, then the dollar takes a very, very rapid fall, and we're really poised for that now because basically in mass the rest of the world is rejecting dollars. Even Mexico is rejecting dollars. India is rejecting dollars. Everybody wants the euro. Nobody wants a loser. Everybody wants a winner. So this is what's happening, and you know it's we're poised for something very sudden to happen. You know that when they say that, you know, 20%
of the dollar. Hold that thought right there, Scott. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Cal Grunwald. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But right now, of course, we're talking about what's really happening as far as the dollar is concerned. And other countries are beginning to look to other reserve currencies. Now, the United States dollar has been certainly the reserve currency of the world ever since the pound collapsed back in, I guess, the 1930s. And so the dollar, certainly after the Second World War, was the preeminent currency, and all currencies were related to the dollar because, at least up until 1971, August of 1971, the dollar was redeemable in gold. And then we went off of the gold standard. The world went off of the gold standard. But they were dependent upon the American Federal Reserve System and the responsible actions of our politicians to maintain a stable American dollar and then tie all the other currencies of the world to the American dollar. And the system worked fairly well until, of course, we got into real trouble there in the late 1970s. And then, of course, they had to raise the interest rate here in the United States to almost 20% to keep the whole world system from collapsing. Well, from there we started to build again, and we've reached a crescendo now. We see nothing being done at all to try to maintain the stability of our currency. The current administration is spending money like it's going out of style. We have the biggest federal deficits. We have the biggest trade deficits in all recorded history. And of course, then other countries are smart enough to realize that the dollar is in trouble, so they're beginning to turn to the euro. Some of them are turning, so the Muslim world is turning to the gold dinar. And of course, the dollar very, very soon, and I suspect within 5, at the most 10 years, but probably much sooner than that, will cease to be the reserve currency of the world. And literally, trillions and trillions of dollars that are being held throughout the world in dollars and currency and in dollar assets will come flooding back into here, into this country, and at that point, heaven help us.
Yes, that's very true, and what people don't realize too is that the government is always one or two steps ahead of the public, and so when everybody wants to not only redeem their dollars but, you know, get them out of financial institutions, you know, the government is there with plenty of executive orders, including one called the Emergency Banking Order, which we've talked about before, which allows the banks to pretty much close their doors whenever they want to at the behest of the government, and they can siphon a few dollars every month to you, whatever they think that you need, just like they did in Argentina, and people can do nothing about it. So that's the thing that I stress when I talk to people. You know, do you have physical control of your wealth? Or don't you? And, you know, 98% of the people in this country, they do not control their wealth. You know, it's in the banks, it's in the stock market, it's all in paper, it's all in electronic form. It's an illusion. I call it imaginary money. And people don't realize that they're at risk. But if you're not in control of the majority of your wealth, you're in big trouble because of what's ahead of us now. So that's why I'm offering, this paper, the Emergency Banking Order, and there's an article on the Fort Knox gold that's not there anymore, and some articles out of the 1933 New York Times when Roosevelt confiscated gold. He shut the bank doors, and then the bankers went through everybody's safety deposit boxes, took whatever they wanted out of them. And this is what we're all facing eventually, probably pretty soon in this country. And I'm offering that along with my paper, my 26-page paper entitled Gold and How to Avoid the Scams in the coin industry, for free of charge. All you have to do is call me at 717-648-2682.
Give that telephone number again, Cal. Give that number one more time.
Yeah, 717-648-2682. And I'll be glad to send you those papers at no cost, at no charge and no obligation. I got a call late last night, 11 o'clock. From a lady out in Washington, and she was telling me, you know, her experiences with a gold coin company, an individual who travels this kind of a circuit around the country. I'm not going to mention any names, but you know, his tactics are just abhorrent, and he holds on to people's money for a minimum of 6 months, and most of the times over a year before people actually get their gold or silver, whatever they ordered. And of course then he pushes the foreign gold and the high mint state coins and all the scams he's doing, and then he says that he can't get the coins, and and he tries to substitute something inferior. It's just, she was just going on and on and on. You know, it's the same thing I hear all the time from people. It's very rare to run into an honest coin dealer out there.
We'll be right back in just a moment with Cal Grunville. Welcome your calls, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I think this is one very real problem. People are going into the purchasing coins that they really have to be very careful. They have to make sure that they're, they shop around and they want to make sure that they're getting the best price, because I know that this is a game that has been played for a long time. And, of course, what they'll do is they'll tell you, oh, you've got to get these collector's coins. And the average individual has no idea what a collector's coin is or what its real value is, and even if they had it and looked at it and held it in their hand, they wouldn't recognize it. And I think you can really get taken pretty to the cleaners by many of the coin dealers who just increase the cost or increase the price so much that it'll take a long, long time before you'll ever be able to get back what you put into it. Or they'll have the foreign coins, there's this treasure trove of coins they found over in Europe someplace. But these coins, if you turn around to dispose of them, are worth nothing compared with what you paid for them. In other words, you have a guaranteed a loss as soon as you buy them.
I was talking to another gentleman yesterday, and we were talking about foreign coins, French francs and German marks and Helvetias and everything else, and of course they're fractional gold coins of less than a fifth of an ounce, and people say these companies say they're really good barter coins, but if you put yourself into a situation where the dollar collapses, and if you have these coins and you want to use it to buy some necessities that you need for survival for you and your family, you try to get one of these in exchange for some food or clothes or whatever it is, and people will say, well, I can't even read it. I can't read the inscription on this coin. How do I know what this is? I've never seen anything like this before. So you're just going to create all kinds of troubles for yourself, and you get into a critical situation. You don't want to have people asking questions about, is this legitimate? Is this gold? And, I can't read it. What does it really say? How much gold is in it, or if it is gold or not? It's just going to create, a lot of doubt and confusion in people's minds. So that's one of the other biggest reasons to stay away from foreign gold, because you're just not going to be able to use it. But if you have an American coin, people can say it. They can see the inscription, and they can, read it and everything else, and, find out the weight. There won't be any questions asked. People are going to readily accept it. So there's a lot of reasons to stay away from foreign gold, and that's one of the biggest ones.
And I think we can thank Congressman Ron Paul for getting that legislation through a number of years ago, so that they did begin to mint American coins. So even though they're expensive, at least, of course, we know pretty well what they're worth. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Cal Grunwald. We're just talking about what's happening, first of all, as far as the economy is concerned, and I am deeply concerned about the economy, especially now that we're in the war. And of course, the president said, the problem is not, the tax cuts. The problem is government spending. Now, that is a very, very true statement, and people are concerned about what's going on. The problem is not the tax cuts, because they stimulate the economy and they let us keep more of our own money. The problem is government spending. The problem was that the president said he was going to cut government spending, cut it just to the core, but he actually increased government spending. So you say one thing and they do another. And not only that, but in the budget they put in, which I think was $89 billion more than last year's bloated budget, why, then, of course, they have all the off-budget items. Now you have the budget, and then you have the off-budget. And the first thing they did was ask for $82 billion, I think it was, to continue the war in Afghanistan the war in Iraq for a period of time. And then, of course, they want to give $1 billion or almost $1 billion for tsunami relief. That's off-budget. And where is the money coming from? we don't have the money. We're going to borrow the money. We're giving away to other countries. And believe me, if you're reading what's going on in Afghanistan, why, they lost $9 billion. Oh, shucks, we don't even know what happened to that. New reports, billions of dollars of others are just sort of disappearing. We're not really sure what's happening to it, but we think it's being spent for something or other, and Halliburton is overcharging us, but we continue paying them because, of course, their CEO, who at least until recently was getting a deferred salary from Halliburton, is the Vice President of the United States. And of course, there are these international corporations, Bechtel, Fluor, certainly Halliburton, these CIA front organizations that provide the military contractors. And these, of course, there are literally tens of thousands of these contractors over there. And heaven only knows what they're doing, but some of these are, frankly, CIA operatives, almost like rogue military units operating both in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And the money is flowing, and of course, you can't keep spending more money than you take in indefinitely, especially when you're interdependent and interlocked with the rest of the world. And my concern is many of these other countries are getting very, very disillusioned with what's going on, and are beginning to shift into other currencies. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Across America, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, we've seen within the last about week the price of gold going from the low 420s up to, what, about 435 or 40 today? Where did it close?
It's 434.30.
434, okay.
$7.52, so it's made a really good jump.
But even more than that, silver is gone. It was down around 620 two or three weeks ago. It has closed today, what, over 750?
752 has made a dramatic jump. Silver has.
And I think if our listeners understand, these are all manipulated commodities. The free market just does not exist. The government allows people to go in and sell silver contracts that they don't have. In other words, you sell silver contract, you have to be able to come up with the silver. There isn't any silver. In fact, they sell more silver contracts than there is, on the entire commodity exchange. So they're totally manipulated, and nothing is being done about it because they want to maintain the perception that everything is fine, that the gold and silver are not going up. When they begin to run, as they did last time, I remember, about 1979, 1980, why, of course, then everybody's attention was focused on them. And then, of course, people realized that our whole economic system was in real trouble, and that's, of course, when we had to jack the interest rates up to almost 20%. Right now, of course, they're not even talking about this. You'll know that what's really going on when suddenly you turn on your news in the evening and they begin telling you the price of gold and silver for the day. They don't mention that now because they don't want to bring your attention to that. But there are other things that, of course, that are happening that, we're just not mentioning at all. For instance, the price of uranium has skyrocketed. The price of uranium stocks is going up. Not a word in that in the media. Why? Because they don't want to call your attention to it. When, of course, they start reporting at the media, the game will be over. But then, of course, the average individual begins to jump into the system and jump into the market. But China is building 50 to 60 nuclear plants right now. And, of course, they plan to put in well over 100 nuclear plants because they need energy. Here in America, why we won't allow them to actually build nuclear power plants, and they're going to drive the price of oil up and get natural gas, and they've already tripled the price of natural gas, which of course is one reason why the price of electricity has increased so very, very much. So this is all being, of course, part of the plan to begin to impoverish the American people, but they cannot let the American people know that because then they might be up in arms. Is this really true? Well, I simply can refer you to the Earth Charter to see the master plan for what's going on. And this is being taught in our schools all across America. Our youth are being indoctrinated that all these things are good. This is how we're, of course, going to preserve the environment for Gaia, Mother Earth. Well, Cal, what are some of your thoughts? What do you foresee here in the next few months, the next year or two?
Well, again, I see as the media is even indicating now, or they're coming out to say that the dollar is going to continue to fall, and we're going to just continue to keep losing more jobs, sending them overseas as we have been. They're going to Mexico, they're going to China, they're going to Taiwan, Thailand, India, they're going everywhere except here. And, you know, people who are, there are more and more people starting to wake up, but still a vast minority, obviously. The wise people are looking at things that are tangible, whether it's food or gold or silver or other commodities, real estate. A lot of people have gone into real estate already. They've flooded the stock market, you know, in horror, and they've invested in real estate. But the problem with real estate is it's not liquid. You know, you just can't turn around and redeem it like you can with a gold or silver coin or another commodity that everybody wants. So people have sunk huge amounts into real estate thinking that's at least something tangible, which it is, but it's not very liquid. So I just encourage people. I said, look, if you're thinking about your family and their future and your survival, if you see what's coming, and a lot of people do, then you should seriously consider, you know, getting out of financial institutions and, you know, putting your money or your wealth into something tangible, whether it's a year or two or 3 years supply of food or clothes or provisions or seeds or gold or silver, you know, even just having cash. While cash is good, have the cash in your hand. Don't let the bank have it because, you know, it's their cash then. It's not yours. And, of course, they've got their intimidation techniques.
But, of course, Raquel, if you have your money in cash and the value of the dollar falls in relationship to other commodities, why, of course, you lose. And that is one of the great problems. I remember a very good friend of mine. He was German. He was a German physician. And he told me about his grandmother who lived in Germany, and she was one of the wealthiest people there. She had 1,000,000 marks. And, of course, the mark was pretty comparable to the dollar. And, of course, this was the time of the Weimar Republic, and she kept it in her mattress at home because she didn't trust the banks. Well, of course, they got into their inflationary spiral, and by the end of the time, that 1,000,000 marks that she had would buy a loaf of bread, if she was lucky. This is what happens, of course, when you get into problems like we are. This is really what happened in Argentina about 4 or 5 years ago when the people had their money in the bank. And then the banks closed their doors. Of course, they had told, the government told the people, the peso is locked to the dollar. We will never change it. You can be sure that the money that you have is as sound as the dollar. The peso is as sound as the dollar. And then one day, they simply closed the doors of the bank, and the people automatically lost 70% of the value of their savings. And then, of course, they opened the doors of the bank again, and they started it all over again. And, of course, they did away with so much of their debt because, of course, by destroying the value of the peso, they destroyed the amount of money they had to pay off in debt. And then, of course, the economy now is doing fine. The only trouble is they've wiped out the middle class. Same thing happened in Russia in the early 1990s when, after the Berlin Wall had come down, and, of course, a lot of the Russian people, even living under communism, they had a stable ruble, and so they had their stable currency, and of course, they were looking forward to this wonderful time now that the communist regime is gone. They honestly believed the propaganda that was being put out. And, of course, the United States sent their experts over there from Harvard University. And, of course, instead of trying to allow people to own their land, instead of allowing to loan their homes, they did a lot of manipulation there to destroy the economy. They created an inflationary spiral. They destroyed about 95% of the value of the currency. And all of the Russian people were impoverished, and except, of course, for the elite. They, of course, realized what was happening. They protected themselves. Incidentally, the people from Harvard made a great deal of money themselves, speculating in the bonds that they were creating, and in fact, there have been a lot of lawsuits about that. I mean, we poured a couple of $1 billion in there to destroy the economy of Russia, and we did a great job. We destroyed the value of the people's savings, and now there are a lot of people in Russia saying, as bad as things were under communism, we wish we could have it back again because at least our money was stable. And people don't understand really what happened during that terrible time or what happened in Argentina just a couple of years ago. But we certainly should learn those lessons. Else we may very well find ourselves facing the same sort of problems. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest is Cal Grunwald. Cal, why don't you give your telephone number out once more? If people would like to get in touch with you and get that information you have, certainly about some of the orders, the executive orders dealing with the banks and the currency, and then those articles you have going back to 1933, which are really so fascinating, because if you do not understand what's happened in the past, why, you certainly can't understand what's going on today. We want to get your telephone number out again.
Yes, okay, and my number is 717-648-2682. That's 717-648-2682. And I'll be glad to send you my pack of information, which is actually two documents. The first one is a 26-page paper that I've written entitled Gold and How to Avoid the Scams in the Coin Industry. It's kind of a consumer reports in the coin industry, which is basically unregulated, and which allows, unfortunately, scam, you know, companies to do whatever they want to do, and without too much overseeing by any government agency. And the second one is a series of articles starting with the emergency banking order, which allows the banks to pretty much close their doors at any point that they want to. And there's an article on the Fort Knox Gold that's not there anymore. And as Stan was saying, some articles, some very, very fascinating articles from the 1933 New York Times and Roosevelt confiscated gold. And it's again a prelude of what's going to happen in the future to us. And Dr. Stan talked about all, you know, in Argentina and Russia, the middle class has been pretty much, you know, annihilated or disappeared. And that's exactly what's happening in this country. You know, the wealth of the middle class is what's at stake right now. And the middle class is very, very content, you know, with their money in the stock market and bonds and CDs and money markets and the conventional dollar-denominated investments. But they're also the ones that are convinced by the government and by Wall Street that these things are going to go on ad infinitum. But if people don't start paying attention and take, you know, matters into their own hands and say, you know, I've got to do something, you know, with my wealth to convert it into something tangible, because in the future, how am I going to survive and how am I going to provide for my family? You know, people don't stop to think, you know, they should run the scenario, you know, through. What would happen when the dollar fails in this country? And it will. Eventually, it could be within a year, it could be within 3-4 years, we don't know. But planning for that eventuality, what are people doing to prepare for that day? And, you know, a father and mother are going to have to look at their children and say, you know, what am I doing to protect my children's future, and how am I going to provide something to eat in those days? You know, this is not doom and gloom. This is called reality. Never before in our history has the dollar fallen 50%, lost 50% of its value in the last 2.5-3 years. And now the media is coming right out to say that this year the dollar is going to go another 20% down. And if that's not a warning sign, I don't know what is. But if, you know, people just have to start paying attention. And that's why I talk about, you know, gold and silver, so it is so important, because they are universally money. All around the world, they're money. Gold has been money for 5,000 years, and so is silver. Right now, it's an industrial metal, but it's going to come back in the last days, as we are in the last days, as a monetary metal. And it's very, you know, even conservatively, and I don't believe all this hype about, you know, speculating by buying silver, but I do believe in buying silver, you know, to have something to barter with. You know, that silver will increase 7 or 8 or 9 times its value today is, I think, an understatement. You know, silver, you know, got to $53 an ounce in 1980. Well, it's $7.52 an ounce now, and when our currency collapses, it will get to at least $50 an ounce. So imagine putting, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 into silver, and multiply that times 7 or 8, what's it going to be worth? You know, it's going to be worth $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, you know, later on. So with some wise economic or, you know, financial moves right now, you can assure your family's financial, you know, future. And if, you know, by preserving wealth, by buying gold coins, gold will get to at least $2,000 an ounce. You know, I'm not one of these people that, trying to create dollar signs in people's eyes by saying gold is going to get to $5,000, $6,000, $10,000 an ounce, although it very well could. I'm just saying conservatively it will get to at least $2,000 an ounce, and right now it's, $4.34. So it just makes good economic sense, good historical sense to prepare yourself, as people who are concerned about your family and your loved ones, to put whatever money you don't want to lose into gold and silver. And I really, really stress silver. I sell a lot of junk silver, what's called junk silver, 90%. These are the dimes, quarters, and half dollars that were minted prior to 1965 because they're just going to be excellent barter coins. I recommend a bag, which is a 55-pound bag of these coins per household, and that'll take you a long time in a barter situation. And it's just excellent. You can't go wrong. You don't have to buy a whole bag. You can buy half a bag, quarter bag. So regardless of the money you have, you can always get something, so that's why I recommend it. So,
well, I think what people have to realize that when you have a stable currency, then of course you want to be involved in investment in the stocks or in any speculations or things of that sort. But you have to have a stable currency. When the currency begins to lose its stability, then you have to be in things, because things maintain their value. Of course, you don't want to buy things that are overvalued, because you may never get your investment out of them, but you need to be invested in things rather than in money. And so if you understand how the cycles are played, why, then, of course, you can do quite well. If you don't, why, you'll end up like the people of Argentina, you'll end up like the people of Russia, and, of course, remember what the plan is. The plan is to redistribute the wealth between nations. Point 10 of the Earth Charter. Well, we've got about 3 minutes here before we have to let you go, Kyle. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners, thoughts you'd like to leave with them?
Yes. Again, I would like to reiterate that everybody out there who's got, family or loved ones should seriously consider doing something, whatever you could, and at least, first of all, start by investigating, looking into gold and silver, what benefit it is historically, the importance of gold and silver, why this information, has been suppressed from the American public. No media talks about it, talks about the value of having gold and silver or having it in your portfolio, but yet, the big portfolio managers, for years, the ones that manage over $10 million portfolios, they, as a standard, they recommend 10 to 15 to 20% of that portfolio in what they call rock, which is gold and silver. So the concept has been around for, many, 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 many years among people that have money, but it doesn't, the common person, the middle class, the media just does not educate people about the value of gold and silver, and that's one of the things that my paper I think does a pretty good job from what I've been told. Anyway, I'm not bragging about my paper, but people say it's a very, very good educational piece. They've never read anything like it. Just kind of very, very logically lays out some very, very basic premises about gold and silver. Who should buy gold and silver, where you should store it, what kind of gold to buy, what kind of silver to buy, what kind of not to buy. It's all right there in that paper, so I wanted to again offer my information. My number is 717-648-2682. That's 717-648-2682. I'll be glad to talk to anybody who wants to call me. I don't believe in high pressure. I believe in a former teacher, so I do everything through education. So, here's the evidence and here are the facts. You can pretty much decide for yourself what you want to do and be glad to make recommendations, if anybody wants to talk to me.
All right, fine. And remember, of course, Warren Buffett is buying overseas currencies. George Soros is investing overseas. They understand what is going on. They're very smart men. They've made fabulous fortunes, but they understand, of course, what happens when the dollar has lost its stability. And that's really what's happened here in the United States. The Federal Reserve System has abandoned its position as a watchdog, maintaining a stable currency. And if you listen very carefully to what Alan Greenspan is saying, he is very, very concerned about the stability of our current situation, especially the housing bubble, which is about to burst. Thanks so much, Cal. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just suggest several things that we have that will help you better to understand what we've been talking about tonight. We carry a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. That's The Creature from Jekyll Island. We have the book Gold by Anthony Sutton. We have another book by Professor Sutton called The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, because it was a conspiracy. It was organized at a secret meeting in Jekyll Island back about 1910. And then, of course, they figured, how could they sell this to the American people? And, of course, the people who put it together were also very powerful banking families. And, of course, they decided that they would convince the American people that this was not going to be a privately owned central bank. It was going to be a branch of the federal government. So they called it the Federal Reserve System. Well, the Federal Reserve is about as federal as Federal Express. They got a nice name, but there's no basis for it at all. So the Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, The Creature from Jekyll Island by Ed Griffin, The Fiat Money Inflation in France, a little book, it's an inexpensive little book, written by Andrew Dickinson White. I believe he was one of the founders, or at least he was the president of Cornell University. He wrote this over 100 years ago about something that happened over 200 years ago, right after the French Revolution. But you need to read and see what happened in 1789 and 1790 and 91 and 92 and 93. Because as you read that book, and look at what's happening today, it's deja vu all over again. We have a great video. It's called The Monopoly Men. That's The Monopoly Men. And you'll actually see a number of our leaders, people, our leading economists, telling you exactly how this whole scheme is manipulated. And certainly the former economist, a very, very famous economist from the University of Chicago, who certainly is looked upon as the leading guru, financial guru of modern times. You'll hear him telling how the Federal Reserve System created the Great Depression of the 1930s. And they did it intentionally by withholding money from the system. And, of course, they crashed the economy and destroyed the values of the savings of the people. And then, of course, to understand everything that we're talking about and put it in proper perspective, you have to understand the spiritual forces behind what's going on. We've already talked about the spiritual forces behind the Earth Charter, which, of course, is written by Gorbachev, Marie Strong, and Stephen Rockefeller, but there are powerful occult forces behind it. We'll be glad to send you a copy of that free of charge if you'd like, although you can probably get it up on the Internet. We have a letter that written in 1933 by President Roosevelt to Colonel House, in which he says, as you and I both know, why the American government has been controlled by financial interests at least 100 years, going back to the days of Andrew Jackson, and that does include the regime of WW, referring to Woodrow Wilson. We'll be glad to send you a free copy of that newsletter, although it's certainly in several of our syllabuses. But, of course, we'd be glad to get you a copy. So you begin to understand this whole thing is manipulated. Even Franklin Delano Roosevelt realized that, as did Colonel House, but, of course, he was part of the problem. If you want to know how best to let people understand about this, we're offering cases of our book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and there's 62 books to a case, and we can make this offer only because we're doing a reprinting, and of course, if we can get enough people to take the cases, why, we can, of course, get the expenses of that printing down tremendously. Over half of them, of course, have already been picked up by the listeners to our program. If you're interested in the case of Brotherhood of Darkness, a wonderful tool that you can utilize to get other people to understand the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged and the forces behind what we're talking about, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, September and October of last year, dealt with the financial situation, give us a call. Pray for America. Pray for revival. But please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so to our listeners who are leaving us at this point, may the Lord be with you. Oh, yeah, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views I've expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Michael Brown. We're going to be talking about the judicial system. We're going to be talking about the fact that when a country has become immoral, and you begin to have immoral people within the political fields, when you have them in the judicial field, when you no longer can depend upon the impartiality of the judicial system, when justice is no longer blind but is up for sale, then no man's purse or pocketbook or property is safe. Michael, thanks so very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, thanks for having me.
Why don't you give our listeners just a little bit of background about yourself and about what you've been doing for some time. I understand that you've been a thorn in the side of some of the judiciary.
Well, some of them, not all of them, unfortunately. I've been ghostwriting appeal briefs and motions and things like that for law professors and attorneys for over 30 years.
Are you a paralegal then, or just sort of self-taught?
Actually, I'm a legal research specialist, and you couldn't really call it self-taught because I learned what I jokingly refer to as Penn State, as in penitentiary.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about then what you've been doing all this time?
Okay, well, like I said, I do a lot of ghostwriting, and then again, there are times when there are things that an attorney just can't do anything about what he's up against, because most people don't want to go in and knock over the trough that they feed out of, and a lot of attorneys would have to do that because the system is so corrupt. Basically, we don't have a court system in this country any longer. What we have is a legal casino, and in order to increase the odds, a lot of times what you have to do is just sort of speak as like break the hands of the blackjack dealers and that sort of thing. There are certain situations in which the judges have gotten so far out of line that you really can't correct them. You just have to destroy them. And then when you get another judge, then quite often the next judge will say, oops, wait a minute, I don't want that to happen to me. The system's actually more corrupt than anybody can possibly imagine, and I could cite example after example. But that's not what we're here for. There are ways to deal with the corruption that they just don't teach you in law school.
All right, fine. Well, what are these methods? And of course, what can the individual do who gets caught up in this legal system? I think the most frightening thing that can happen, is to get a paper in the mail saying you're being sued.
Well, you don't normally get it in the mail. Normally, there's a process.
All right, fine.
Parked on your front step. Now, there's a number of things you can do. Shall we start with federal judges?
Let's talk about federal judges.
Okay, well, most of them are completely out of line. And if you want to scrape one off the bench, there are a number of things you can do.
All right, fine. Well, you just hold that thought for a moment here, and then we'll be back in just a moment. Our guest is Michael Brown, who's been working at the judicial system for some 30 years. Pretty well informed about what's going on. We'll be right back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Okay, Michael, well, go ahead and let's just start talking about the federal court system.
Okay, well, the first way that you get a federal judge, and let me point out, there's two things that always work. They're called numbers and repetition. If you do the same thing often enough and it's done by enough people, it's going to work. It's just about that simple as far as the judicial system goes. Now, back, all of this was going back around 1981. Congress enacted a statute. It was at one time Title 28 of the United States Code, Section 372, subsections C1. And what it was a complaint for judicial misconduct. Now, the problem with what Congress did is that when you have a problem with a federal judge and you fill out a complaint for judicial misconduct, first thing that you're told is, well, you know, this has, this isn't, you know, or doesn't, not supposed to have anything to do with a judge's ruling in a particular case. Well, of course, that eliminates 99% of what your problem is supposed to be, because, you know, judges get so far out of line with some of their rulings that they really do need to be complained about. The second thing is that, and this is the big mistake that Congress made, but there's a way to overcome it, is that the complaint for judicial misconduct goes to the chief judge of the circuit. For example, in the circuit courts of appeals, there are approximately a dozen in the United States. They're numbered 1 through 11. And, of course, there's the one in Washington, D.C. For example, in California.
We're in the Ninth Circuit, aren't we?
That is correct, yeah. I was just, you know, you knew exactly where I was going. Everything from Arizona, Nevada, Montana, and everything west, all the way out to the North Mariana Islands and north to Alaska, that's all part of the Ninth Circuit. Well, and of course, then you have these other circuits. And what happens is that when you fill out a complaint for judicial misconduct, it goes to the chief judge of the circuit. Well, of course, the chief judge, he wants to keep everything operating harmoniously underneath him, you know, and your rights be damned. I mean, he just, you know, they just don't care. So what winds up happening is that the complaint goes to the very person that it shouldn't go to, the chief judge, who doesn't want to rock the boat or antagonize any of his buddy judges or, you know, the brethren of the black robe or whatever. So what happens, and this has been pretty consistent, is that in a given year, you may have as many as 1,000 complaints for judicial misconduct filed, and the odds are, and this goes on, is true years after years, in not a single instance will a situation be correct. Anyway,
This is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Michael Brown, and Michael is talking about what you can do if you feel a judge is really out of line, and that is you can file a statement, a petition of judicial misconduct, but as Michael points out, it goes to the chief judge of that area, that district, federal district court, who does not want anything to happen. He wants to keep everything smooth. He certainly doesn't want to have anybody under his authority named a judge named for misconduct. And so even though there may be 1,000 petitions raised all across the country for judicial misconduct, nothing happens in any of them because it's a good old boys club. Everybody looks after everybody else's back. Doesn't matter how corrupt a judge is, they've got to, they've got to be in really terrible before the other judges will take a stand against them. But I remember one up here in the peninsula above where I live, in just south of San Francisco, where one of the judges was working with the mafia. And, you know, he was allowed to continue on as judge with the hearings. Well, I think eventually he was allowed to retire rather than be put in prison, where he should have gone, as he'd sent so many other innocent people to prison. But all the judges said, well, he was such a nice guy, and we ought to forgive him for working with the mafia. And I remember that case very well. Yeah, but that's the sort of thing that really goes on. It's sort of like everybody looks after everybody else because nobody wants to rock the boat. So pick up the story there.
Okay, that's funny. Only one of them was working with the mafia?
Well, that was the only one that we knew about.
The only one that got caught, right. Only one clumsy enough to give it up.
Well, basically, they were tapping the phone of the mafia boss, and they picked up the judge calling him to warn him that he was under being investigated by the FBI.
That doesn't surprise me a bit. Now what we came up with, and this is a number of years ago, is what we call the mosquito bite theory of judicial discipline. And you can fill out a complaint for judicial misconduct, and it's just water off a duck's back for most of these judges. Nothing's going to happen because the chief judge isn't going to do anything. He's just going to play cat in the sandbox with the whole mess. Now, there's an exception to that. You can go through the swamp and you can get bitten by a mosquito. And, it's an annoyance, but that's about it. On the other hand, nobody can survive 10,000 mosquito bites. And we first found this out, this is going back about 1997. There was a fellow out in San Diego named Kenneth Bauer that had a criminal case against him. And this judge, his name was Brewster. And Brewster was he was a complete idiot. I mean, this character just would not do anything he was supposed to do. And
was he a federal judge?
Oh, of course, yeah. Federal judges, if you can break the back of the federal judiciary, which nobody has done yet, but once that happens, because the federal judges protect the state judges, they come up with all these doctrines, like, judicial immunity, what they call younger abstention. They have all these doctrines that the federal courts have designed to protect not only their own corruption, but that in the state courts. In fact, going back to right after the Civil War, Congress passed a whole bunch of jam-up civil rights statutes from 1866 to 1871, and contrary to what the courts would have you think today, those statutes weren't just designed to protect freed slaves. What had been happening at the time during Reconstruction is that Union soldiers would be literally hauled into Confederate courts for one thing or another, and for a lot of these Confederate judges, war wasn't over, and there was such an outcry about the shafting that Union soldiers were getting in Confederate courts in the Deep South, that's one of the reasons Congress enacted what we now know as Title 42, Section 1983, and a host of these other civil rights statutes. And at the time that those statutes were enacted to rein in misbehaving Southern courts, what wound up happening was the Supreme Court, in a case titled Bradley versus Fisher in 1872, all the way up to modern times, came up with all these doctrines about judicial immunity, though that had never been the intention of Congress. Congress basically intended judges, state judges, to be just as suable as members of the legislature, as members of the executive department. And through all these judicially created doctrines, what wound up happening is that the courts literally just became completely exempt from any sort of discipline or accountability. Now, the way we discovered you make these people accountable, like with Brewster in the Kenneth Bauer case, is you don't just file a complaint for judicial misconduct. You get a little help from your friends, and you file hundreds of them. Well, what happened in that case, Kenneth Bauer called me after this program had been implemented when he was, I think, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the chief judge there, was getting hit with about 30 complaints a day on this one particular judge. And that's kind of bad when you think about, in a given year, there's normally never more than 1,000 complaints for judicial misconduct, and here one federal judge was getting more complaints literally every 30 days against himself than all the other federal judges in the United States were getting all year long. So what wound up happening is Bauer called me after this program was implemented, which he didn't know anything about, and he said, "Brownies, I don't understand this." He said, "This judge is just in a 180. He's actually doing what he's supposed to be doing." And when I explained what had been happening to him, Bauer said, "Oh, somebody made him accountable." Well, that's what you do. Again, it's the mosquito bite theory of judicial discipline. If you have enough people going after one federal judge at some point, you're going to get him. It's that simple. Now, what happened in the meantime, and this will show you how completely corrupt the federal courts are, is that when all these people started filing all these complaints for judicial misconduct, then the chief judges in several circuits, because, you know, quite frankly, this worked quite well, not just because it was such an annoyance because of one judge, but the Administrative Office of the United States Courts monitors, I mean, they keep track of and they keep the statistics on all the complaints for judicial misconduct. So what started happening is the chief judges started falsifying the docket numbers of these complaints, because when you fill out a complaint for judicial misconduct, today it's known as Title 28, Section 351, but when you fill it out, it's supposed to be given a docket number, and again, you know, numbers and repetition, they always work. So what the Circuit Court of Appeals judges, and I'm not talking about just one, they started doing this on a regular basis, started falsifying the docket numbers. They'd see complaints coming in that were similar complaints from different people. They'd assign them all the same docket number. So then, when the statistics got to the Administrative Office of the United States Courts, which is monitored by Congress, well, how many complaints for judicial misconduct did you have? Oh, well, let's say in the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals in St. Louis, Missouri, which covers an 8-state area. Well, Congress would look at it and say, oh, well, there was only, you know, 7 complaints here, even though one of those complaints, one of those docket numbers, actually was assigned to several hundred different petitions.
Well, of course, now, isn't that illegal?
Oh, is that illegal? It's a felony. It comes under Title 18, Section 2071, which is falsifying government records, and this is a statute that's been on the books since shortly after our Civil War. Problem is that who do you go to complain about the felonies committed by a federal judge?
Well, who do you go to when a federal judge commits a felony?
Well, you're supposed to be able to go to the United States Attorney, but United States Attorneys are not going to prosecute federal judges, because United States Attorneys all come under the aegis of the Department of Justice. This is the same Department of Justice that supposedly investigates candidates for the federal judiciary. It's a really incestuous relationship, because what winds up happening is the Department of Justice minions, once they have approved a federal judge, and they're only going to approve him if he's basically a Nazi, what winds up happening is now you have this symbiotic relationship in which the Department of Justice has approved this totally unethical, incompetent, arrogant, merciless individual for the position.
No, but some of them really are not that bad. Some of them aren't. Some of them pretty good.
Only the dead ones. The problem is, and Dr. Stan, this is something that, you know, people today really need to wake up and realize, is that you cannot accept and function as a federal judge these days unless you're an absolute piece of human garbage. Imagine that you get appointed to this position, and then the very next thing you have to do the next day is start trampling the rights of American citizens. You send them to the penitentiary. You send them to the penitentiary for statutes you know are unconstitutional. For example, the Second Amendment is quite plain. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Every federal statute that regulates any type of firearm is an infringement of the Second Amendment. And so, as a federal judge, what do? You take a look at the statute and say, all right, this is an infringement of the Second Amendment, and throw it out like judges did back in the 1930s. Or do you just go ahead and send somebody to the penitentiary anyway, knowing what you're doing is wrong, but you're cooperating with the very Justice Department to put you in position in the first place?
We'll be back in just a moment with Michael Brown here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Michael Brown. We're talking about the problems that we have with our judiciary. And the fact the very people who put the people, the judges, or allow them to be put into positions of power are the very people who are so intent upon infringing our Constitution. He uses the example, of course, is the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment says, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged. There's no question about that. And yet they passed all sorts of illegal federal laws, and the courts won't stand up. Because, of course, the whole idea, if you can disarm the people, you can have a fascist society. There really are people who want a fascist society in America. There have always been people who wanted a fascist society. There have always been those who wanted to rule over other people and establish a feudal system in here, and it goes right back to the time when the pilgrims came, and at the same time the God-fearing people came, a small group of Rosicrucians was sent over by a man named Sir Francis Bacon, and their job was to take over control of our government. And, of course, they did it just about in 1730, again in 1830, and, well, now they're in positions of power. Their descendants dedicated to the same goal, and that is the Novus Ordo Seclorum. And you can't have this coming New World Order with an armed and informed American people. So Michael's point is that we have federal judges who know the statutes they're enforcing are illegal and go ahead and do it anyway. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, actually, Dr. Stan, I'm glad you brought up the reference to the feudal system, because a lot of people under the mistaken impression that what we have is a constitutional republic. Not true. A lot of other people are under the impression that we have a democracy. Not true. When you have a legal system in which the law is whatever the lord of the manor says it is, which is what you have with the federal judiciary, the law is not what the people enacted in their constitutions. The law is not what Congress enacted in various statutes. The law is whatever some federal judge that you're in front of, or someone you care about is in front of, decides it is at the moment. And when you have a system in which the law is whatever the lord of the manor says it is, and he rules by the seat of his pants and by whim and caprice, and whatever he feels like, that is the feudal system, and that's exactly what we have in the United States today in our federal court system. That isn't a constitutional republic, it's not a democracy. It's literally, and I mean literally, the feudal system.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, you're telling us that there's a problem. I think many of us recognize there's a problem. So then, of course, what do we do?
Okay, well, remember, again, numbers and repetition. Well, what winds up happening today is that, like I said, if you start filing, you know, hundreds of complaints for judicial misconduct, and there are people who will do that, you run in, head on into the Achilles heel of what Congress did, because you're going to have a chief judge falsifying government records, which carries 5 years in the penitentiary. But again, we're back to the Justice Department. Doesn't work. In fact, the Justice Department was actually started years and years after the Constitution was enacted. The original Justice Department was put together on June 22, 1870, and all it could do at the time was investigate postal depredations and compile crime statistics.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Michael, and we'll be right back. All right, fine. Well, Dr. Stan, I guess, is Michael Brown, and Michael is talking about the judicial system and of course, the fact that there is corruption within the judicial system. And he was just saying that, of course, who do you report corruption in the judicial system to? Well, you can't very well report it to the federal attorneys, because they have to work with these judges, and they're not going to go out on a limb. And so then we have the Federal Justice Department, and Michael was saying that the Federal Department of Justice wasn't formed until 1870. Is that right?
That's correct.
Go ahead. Pick up the story from there.
Okay, and what has wound up happening is the old camel's nose under the tent trick, is that the Justice Department arrogated more and more power to itself. Congress came along and enacted a few statutes that basically they were nothing more than post hoc rationalizations for what the Justice Department was doing anyway. For example, just a quick aside here, is that in 1903, in a case called United States versus Rosenthal, two members of the Department of Justice had gotten into the grand jury room in what they now call the Japanese silk fraud cases. And the federal judge at the time, in 1903, we only had 54 judges, federal judges in the entire United States, and now we've got over 800 of the rascals. But the federal judge in that case said, wait a minute, you know, government attorneys aren't allowed in the grand jury room, so he quashed the indictment. Well, 3 years later, Congress came along and enacted a statute and a rule that we now know as Title 28 United States Code, Section 515, and Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 6D, and Congress said, well, you know, we think that members of the Department of Justice should have the right to attend the grand jury in its room, which was completely unknown and unheard of when our Constitution was enacted. We couldn't have government attorneys conducting grand jury proceedings, which is exactly what they do now, which is why the federal grand jury is nothing more than a rubber stamp for the Justice Department.
Well, that's why you can indict a ham sandwich.
Precisely, okay? Yeah, you can indict a ham sandwich, you can indict a cucumber. I mean, it really doesn't make any difference. Out of the 25,000 indictments a year that are proposed to grand juries, I think, this is going back about 15 years or so, the number of no bills in which the grand jury didn't actually indict someone, out of the 25,000 proposed, never amounts to more than like 16 or so. You're just talking, your chances of not being indicted by a federal grand jury if they start, quote, investigating, unquote, you, are about less than 1 in 200. I mean, the grand jury today has become just a complete and abject joke. I mean, and unfortunately, and this is what compounds it, is the federal judiciary, even federal judges, when it's pointed out to them, that what Congress did in 1906 was actually amend the Constitution merely by legislating, which all the court decisions tell you Congress cannot do, the judges just ignore it. They don't pay any attention. They just let the people from the Justice Department do whatever they want to whomever they want, like they did with Jim Traficant. What winds up happening is you have a system that literally perpetuates itself because of this incestuous relationship between the Justice Department and the federal judiciary. Now, there is hope here, however, because there is a way to deal with these rascals that everybody understood two centuries ago. For example, now we were talking about the Second Amendment a while ago, but at one point Congress trampled the First Amendment and federal judges viciously upheld the unconstitutional laws that Congress had passed, and I'm referring to the Alien and Sedition Laws of 1798. And one of those laws was you couldn't criticize any elected official at the federal level unless, of course, his name was Thomas Jefferson. And there were four of these laws. Three of them were directed at keeping foreigners out, and the fourth one was to make sure that nobody could criticize incumbent politicians. You can imagine how well such a law would go over today. But in 1798, even though every federal judge on the bench knew those laws were unconstitutional, just as every federal judge on the bench today knows that the Second Amendment laws or anti-Second Amendment laws are unconstitutional, they enforced those laws with such viciousness that when Thomas Jefferson ran for president in 1800, the common people, because they understood the connection between the politicians they elected and the judges they got, created what we today call the Jeffersonian landslide of 1800.
And of course, that was because the Federalists wanted to centralize all power in Washington, and Thomas Jefferson, of course, was more or less a libertarian. He led the Republican Party at that time, and of course, was that great conflict that resulted in his election in 1800. We'll be back in just a moment right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Michael Brown. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to give Michael a call. And he's talking about, of course, what happened with the Alien and Sedition Acts passed in 1798. And, of course, the common people realized that this was a move towards a federal system. They basically wanted, there were people like Alexander Hamilton who really wanted an authoritarian system. He wanted a monarchy. In fact, Alexander Hamilton, with very, very close ties to the ruling parties over in Great Britain, had wanted the American president to be elected for life. In fact, when the Constitutional Convention wouldn't go along with him, why, he picked up and left. He was furious. But, of course, Alexander Hamilton, of course, was the first Secretary of Treasury, and he's the one who created the first Bank of the United States. And, of course, let's get back to Michael Brown's story. You don't want to hear the relationship between the Federalists and, of course, the ruling class in Great Britain, but that is really what they always wanted, was a similar class here, a new feudal lords. So pick up the story there, Michael Brown.
Well, you're correct there, and the problem is the new feudal lords we've got, we call them federal judges today. I mean, any poor kid from Arkansas can become president, but you've got to have connections to be a federal judge. Well, and Aaron Burr obviously did us a favor by killing Alexander Hamilton in a duel before he could do any more damage to the rest of us.
But, of course, most people don't understand that Alexander Hamilton was a very evil man.
Well, I understand it.
I know you do, but unfortunately most of people really don't understand the conflict that took place back in those days. But if you read my September newsletter last year, we'll be glad to send any of our listeners to that. If we go into this whole situation, September and October newsletters, we'll take you into the background of Alexander Hamilton and how he betrayed America.
Well, yeah, and here's something else that you touched on, is that back in 1800, one of the reasons we had the Jeffersonian landslide is that back then everybody, and I mean everybody who voted, understood the connection between out-of-control federal judges and the members of Congress that we elect. Well, today almost no one understands that, because when you go to your congressman for help with a federal judge who's completely out of line, and you can't get any of the other federal judges to get this character back to where he's supposed to belong, you get this excuse that, oh, well, there's nothing that I can do because of the separation of powers that's in the Constitution.
Well, Chris, that you can impeach a judge for malfeasance in office, and nobody has the courage to do it. We'll be right back with Michael Brown. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Go ahead, Michael. Pick up the story. There's a great deal that, of course, the Congress could do if they had the courage to do it, but they're afraid they'll end up like Jim Chaffacott or like George Hansen if they take a strong stand.
Well, there's some clouds on the horizon nobody's ready for yet. And as I was saying just a minute ago, when we're referring to separation of powers, those words are nowhere in the Constitution. Not only that, they're contradicted by Article 1, Section 2, Clause 5. The House shall have the sole power of impeachment. And all of Article 3, which basically says not only can Congress create the lower federal courts, but when it comes to the Supreme Court, Congress has the authority to enact laws of procedure or rules of procedure for the Supreme Court. For example, there was a bill introduced last year, it failed, that if Congress could remove certain subjects like the Pledge of Allegiance and so forth and so on completely from the Supreme Court. There was another bill, I believe it was House Bill 3920, that hopefully will get resurrected. And what this bill said is that Congress shall have the power to overrule Supreme Court decisions.
Well, of course, they always had the right to limit appellate jurisdiction. That is the exact wording, I believe, of Article 3, Section 3, the right to limit appellate jurisdiction. In other words, they can say to the Supreme Court, you can't even rule on this specific issue because we have the right to limit what you can do. That was to be the counter to the Supreme Court ever becoming authoritarian, or as some people refer them to today, supremacists. The Supreme Court is controlling everything. These are people who are, unfortunately, do not believe in the Constitution. They are activist judges, and they're a threat to the security of everyone listening to this program, to every citizen in America.
Well, now, here's the funny part. No argument. However, shortly after this bill was introduced, this House Bill 3920, where Congress could overrule Supreme Court decisions, there was a case that came out of Washington State. The name of it was Crawford versus Washington. And what it had to do with was the Confrontation Clause, because the Supreme Court had, through the years, so watered down the Sixth Amendment that basically they said, well, okay, you know, even though the Sixth Amendment says you have the right to confront your accusers, on this particular case, they used a tape recording of the guy's wife. Apparently some guy, character, tried to rape this guy's wife. Guy went over to his apartment, took a knife to him, carved him up pretty good apparently, didn't kill him. And so when the wife wouldn't testify against her husband, what she'd said again to the police, they said, well, there's a sufficient indicia of reliability, and they were basing this on a Supreme Court case, so even though he can't cross-examine, he can't confront his own wife, they're just going to introduce the tape recording as evidence anyway. Well, got up to the Supreme Court from the Washington, and this is Washington State Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, in a move I have never seen before, and this hasn't been in over 30 years, what they did was, on this constitutional issue, instead of building on their prior nonsense, like they did with Roe versus Wade and a lot of these other cases, instead of basically taking their own prior decisions and bootstrapping them and playing telephone like you did in fourth grade with it and so forth and so on, to where their ruling was just would have been completely alien to the people who wrote the Constitution, on this particular case, and this may be the most important Supreme Court case of the 21st century, nobody realizes it yet, because, well, here's what they did. Instead of building on their own prior nonsense, they went all the way back to 1791, and they said, okay, this is what the Confrontation Clause meant in 1791, and then they quoted 200 years of history and judicial decisions, not from 1791, but for two centuries before 1791, saying, all right, here is the history of this clause. Here's what it meant under the English common law, and our Constitution was written in the language of the English common law. What they showed was is that here is two centuries of history to demonstrate what this clause meant, what it meant in 1791. In other words, they addressed original intent instead of their own prior decisions.
Well, now, basically, then, what did they decide?
What they decided was, in this particular case, that since the accused didn't get to confront the witness against him, which was his own wife, the case had to go upside down. It had to be reversed.
Oh, now, was his wife testifying against him?
No. There was a tape recording of her testimony that they introduced as the testimony against him. You can't cross-examine a tape recording. And what the Supreme Court did, not only did they go to original intent, not only did they quote two centuries of history and precedent to show what the Confrontation Clause meant in 1791, but in so doing, they overruled one of their own prior decisions. Now, this was actually a stroke of genius on their part, because while this litigation was pending about Congress being able to overrule Supreme Court decisions, that's one decision that it would have been impossible for Congress to overrule, simply because the Supreme Court demonstrated original intent, and if Congress had overruled a decision like that, then they would have, by legislation, been amending the Constitution, which they can't do under Article 5.
Okay. So, but basically then, of course, they said that they could not use the tape recording against the husband because he could not examine that.
Yes, you could not cross-examine. You can't cross-examine a tape recording or anything like that. And there have been cases for years in which the courts have done precisely that. In fact, I did an entire it's a booklet, actually. It's about 50 pages. It's called the Bill of Rights Handbook. And what it shows is that here's what the Constitution meant, or the Bill of Rights meant when it was enacted, and here's how the federal judiciary has watered the provisions down to where they're completely unrecognizable.
Well, I think that might be something to be fascinating to read. Do you want to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, how they can get your material? Is there a website? And how did they get this Bill of Rights notebook that you're speaking of?
Well, actually, I've written several books on the legal system and how to deal with it. And if they want a free catalog, even a free CD-ROM that you carry some of my seminars, because, you know, I go around the country giving seminars on judge busting and how to deal with the legal system, they need to call Peter Simpson, and he's at area code 320-857-2400. That's area code 320-857-2400, and Peter will either send them a free catalog or a free CD-ROM. It's up to them. But a lot of this that I'm explaining is available in numerous books that I've written and seminars that I've conducted and that sort of thing.
And so you actually go around telling people how to work within the legal system and how to defend themselves against this basically corrupt system.
Right, except that there's more to it than defense. Mostly what I teach is attack, because when you get hauled in front of a federal judge, there's an attorney down in Texas, and I used his quote on the beginning of my criminal defendant's Bible, which is a 500-page monstrosity on how to defend yourself in a criminal case. And the quote goes something like this: this is what you have to do in a state appellate court. This attorney was from Texas. But in federal court, you need a priest, not a lawyer. That's how completely corrupt the federal system is. I mean, it's corruption on top of corruption. But again, there are ways to deal with it. There are several ways. Now, the quickest way to deal with it, if you want to correct the entire situation, and there's something looming on the horizon that very few people in Congress are aware of. I think the only one that's aware of it right now is Hillary Clinton, and I'll get to this in a minute. But if you want to reform the judicial system and you want to discipline federal judges and you have a congressman who won't do his job, in other words, the Congress shall have the sole power of impeachment, a single member of Congress can destroy a single federal judge, as Gerald Ford proved back in 1969 when he went after the fellow who was supposed to be the next Chief Justice, Abe Fortas. And Gerald Ford brought charges against him from the floor of Congress, and he was, at the time, Ford was just merely he was a congressman from Michigan, and he didn't even have any seniority or anything like that.
Well, of course, that was because Abe Fortas had actually been on the take. He was had all sorts of illegal activities he himself was involved in as a Supreme Court justice. Wasn't he taking money from somebody's foundation?
Oh, well, yeah, but see, they're all doing that. I mean, when you actually get into investigating the federal judiciary, let me just give you a quick example here. There's a statute on the books, I believe it's Title 28, Section 458, and it tells you that a federal judge who practices law while he's a federal judge, that's a high misdemeanor. Well, you get impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors. Well, there's a federal judge, and this fellow's in my Bill of Rights handbook. I can't remember his name right off the top of my head. In Oklahoma, that not only is he a federal judge, but he's also the chief counsel for a hospital. There in Tulsa, well, that's a misdemeanor. There's another statute, that the anti-nepotism statute, that tells us that you cannot have two people within the degree of something like first cousin on the same court of appeals. Well, there's Richard Arnold and Morris Shepherd Arnold, and the two of them are sitting in the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals in St. Louis. This has been going on for longer than 10 years in violation of that federal statute. And whenever it's brought to the attention of the chief judge of that circuit, he just blows it off and says, oh, well, the statute wasn't enacted, until after they were both appointed, which is total nonsense. The statute's been on the books since 1948. In other words, they just lie about it, and nobody does anything. Members of Congress, for the most part, when you go to them to complain about a federal judge, it's their job to discipline these dirtbags. You get this excuse of separation of powers. Well, the easiest way to make sure that this system is going to work is if the bum that's been elected doesn't do the job, throw the bum out. And that, you know, that sounds like, oh, well, that's real difficult because of the retention rate of these characters. But like I said, there's something looming on the horizon that nobody is aware of, either in the population or in the Congress. Like I said, the only exception may be Hillary Clinton. She may have already figured this out. She created quite a stir the other day. Oh, I think this was February 17th, when she came out and said, well, you know, all ex-convicts should be allowed to vote. Well, there's 22 states in which they're not. The other states, the other 28 states, they are. But here's what Hillary knows that most of the public doesn't know. We have 2.1 million people behind bars. We have another 6 million on probation or parole. Now, that's 8 million people who cannot vote. Here's the Achilles heel of this entire system. And this may happen within the next election. In other words, you may see this, the entire judicial system in the United States go upside down in less than 24 months for this reason. For every person in prison or who's currently afoul of the legal system, there are normally five people who can vote who care about them. Father, sister, mother, brother, friends, fellow gang members, or whatever. But these people don't understand at the moment what the amount of clout they've got, because if you multiply those 8 million people by the five people who care about them, you now have a voting block of 40 million people. Now, if you add the people who've already done their time, who've been turned into second-class citizens by the federal and state judicial systems, and once you have a felony conviction in this country, and this is forever. This isn't something like in England where the disability lasts for 10 years. I'm talking about you take these disabilities to the grave with you. You can't own firearms. In 22 states, you can't vote. You can't serve on juries, you can't serve on grand juries, you can't even get a job at the post office. In other words, you've been turned into the legal equivalent of an Alabama 1850s legal Negro. In other words, basically, you've become a third-class citizen. Now, these third-class citizens, if you add the people who've already done their time, been through the meat grinder, been reduced to the status of peasantry, you now have a voting block of 60 million people. Now, that's out of less than 200 million voters in the entire country. And 60 million people can decide any election that takes place. And when this 60 million people wakes up and realizes, wait a minute, if I want to reform this judicial system, all I have to do is register to vote along with these other 60 million people and then throw these bums out in the next election, you're going to have a political bloodbath the likes of which this country's never seen. It'll be even worse than the 1932 election when Roosevelt was elected, because people were fed up with the policies of the then-current administration. And once this happens, you're going to see a legal tsunami the likes of which this country hasn't seen since the year 1800, and it may be a lot worse because back then people still knew how to behave themselves. And once this voting block of 60 million people gets a taste of its own power, who knows where it's going to stop. It may not stop like it did in 1800, simply with the throwing out of all these Federalist politicians. It may go as far as the French Revolution did between 1789 and 1794.
All right, well, let's go to Mike calling from Michigan. Mike, do you have a quick question? We're almost out of time.
Okay. My understanding, the corporate United States was bankrupted, according to Congressman Traficant. He made a speech in Congress in 1993. And I think it's a fundamental precept of statutory code that bankrupt entities, corporate entities such as the corporate U.S., doesn't have legal standing.
All right. Well, let's see what our guest has to say. Do you know anything at all about that?
Well, that sounds like what we normally call patriot mythology, but even if everything he's saying is correct, here's my next question. In today's courts, with these corrupt federal judges that we've got, how are you going to win a case with that argument?
And of course, the thing is that you can argue all of these things. Instead of doing something where you can be effective, you could just stand out there and say, well, I don't have to have a driver's license. I don't have to have a marriage license. You try to fight the system that way, you're not going to be effective. I think what you're doing is very effective.
Well, and the thing is that, the big problem that we've got is that even if those arguments are correct, all right, well, here, I'll give you another example. Let's say you get caught with a submachine gun, all right, and you tell the court, well, look, this statute that you're going to send me to prison on violates the Second Amendment? Oh, really? Okay. And you tell that to a federal judge, and the federal judge sends you to the pound anyway? Well, what good did your argument avail you? In other words, if you don't hurt these people, if you don't destroy them, if you don't wreck their careers, the odds are you're not going to get anywhere. It doesn't matter whether you're right or not.
And Mike may or may not be right. I don't know whether Traficant made that speech. If he did, so what? I mean, where is Traficant today? He's in prison, and you're not going to get any place with the argument. The important thing, of course, is to educate the American people. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Michael Brown, and it's been a fascinating hour. We've got about 3 more minutes before we have to let Michael go. Why don't you go ahead, Michael, and just give us some a tie-up, what you'd like, the message you'd like to leave with our listeners this evening, and how can this discontent really be manifest? You know, today it's said that about a third of the young black men, say between 20 and 30, are either in prison or on probation or parole here in the United States. Almost a third of the young black men, 20 to 30, are in prison on probation or parole. What does that say to you? Is that happening by accident, or is there an agenda behind what's going on today, dividing black from white and building racial animosities that were never there before? But pick up the story, Michael.
Well, actually, yeah, there is an agenda, and here's the way it works. With the invention of the cotton gin, the privileged oligarchy, the ruling elite, needed a cheap source of labor, so they imported slaves. Well, Abe Lincoln kind of, you know, screwed up that program. So then they began importing immigrants. And the immigrants, after they'd been here a generation or two and sent their kids to college, well, they were no longer a source of cheap labor. So then the privileged elite, the ruling oligarchy, they started sending the jobs out of the country overseas. Well, then the people overseas started getting smarter and smarter. And pretty soon, they were making the same amount of money, not necessarily paying the help, but they were making the same amount of money as the American corporations. So now, there's only one source of cheap labor left.
And that's the prison population.
That is correct. And as far as a third of the young black men, actually, it's worse than that. Barbara Rowland, the columnist, a number of years ago, this is going back into the late 90s, she pointed out that at the current rates of people getting shafted by the judicial system, by the year 2010, that every black male between the ages of 18 and 40 would either be in prison or under some type of judicial supervision. And what people don't understand when they look at, you know, the minorities being shafted in this country, and it doesn't matter whether they're blacks or American Indians or Latinos, what they have to understand is that the white boys are next. The same things that you saw happening in the inner cities 25, 30 years ago, and only happening to blacks and, you know, in the barrios for the Latinos and that sort of thing, they're happening to everybody right now.
Yeah, Michael, we're just about out of time. It's been fascinating. I do hope we can get you back on some of our other programs. Give that telephone number just one more time.
Okay. Anybody wants any of my material, it's area code 320-857-2400. Just call for a free info pack.
Repeat that one more time.
Area code 320-857-2400.
God bless you. Thank you so much. Good night.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this is is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and it's really been a fascinating evening. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Michael Brown. He's got a lot of great information out there, and we do unfortunately have a corrupt system because there are dark spiritual forces that are energizing the destruction of America. And if you doubt that, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and you can get it by itself or with a video or an audio tapes, or you can get it as the Brotherhood of Darkness special, or at least for another week or so where we'll be able to make the offer that you can get a complete case of Brotherhood of Darkness. That's 62 books, and you're going to have to call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 for more information on that. I think that you'll be pleasantly surprised when you realize what we've done. We're doing a major printing, and of course, the more we print, why, the better it is. And that's why we can make an offer like this today. And we hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration, because look upon Brotherhood of Darkness as a weapon. The one thing that the people of positions of power fear is the American people will learn the truth. That there are two forces in America. One is the America that you and I love, that we grew up in, at least I did, where, of course, the America was good and righteous as a whole, and our good people were good and righteous in our courts. We had moral people because we held the Christian values. But there has always been evil organizations and secret societies here, going back to the time when, as I said earlier, Sir Francis Bacon sent a group of Rosicrucians to America in 1620 or 1630. That, of course, is beautifully covered in some of the videos we have, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. You'll certainly want to get those videos, and, of course, you want to get the show Joe Schimmel's videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll. You want to get this information and help us to get it disseminated across America. But you can also get a case of our books, which tells you that basically the same story. There really are secret societies. There really are organizations like the Rosicrucians that has a temple over in San Jose, like the Theosophists, and you can go up on the webpage. There are Luciferian and Satanic and witches organizations in America, but they all derive their power from the other dimension. And there really is a spiritual battle taking place today for the hearts of men, for the souls of mankind, for the future of America. Well, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Let me suggest our four tape set, Satanism and Deliverance, interviews with the people who have actually been involved in Satanism, come from satanic families, and of course, their story of deliverance. This is not imaginary. It is real. These things go on in our society today. And if you see the videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, you'll understand why Michael Jackson's in so much trouble today. That's the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. They sold their souls for rock and roll. Please go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there. 5 hours a day, either directly or with the affiliated networks. You can certainly listen to the archive programs. You can listen to our shortwave programs. Get the information and help us to reach others with an understanding that we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out in a political, ideological, cultural battlefield. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our website, radioliberty.com. If you haven't seen my new video, it's entitled None Dare Call It Genocide. It goes into, of course, the fact that they're using mercury and fluoride and aspartame to destroy the minds of our children. The documentation's all there. You need to help us get the truth out while we still can. Well, of course, until tomorrow at the same time, please pray for America, for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, or I guess it'll be Thursday now, because the Freedom 21 will be here tomorrow. Until then, Thursday, may the Lord be with you.